All right, this is our Happy House Hunters group. We're all about developing wealth through real estate. And so I'm going to tell you just a bit about me for those of you that are listening in. I have the Kathy Benner International Academy. There is a complete course in there, and it's all about the six F's of real estate. It's how to find it, how to fund it, then how to fix it. And then finally, are you going to flip it or are you going to fill it? And then what is that freedom number? How many of those do you have to do to make that day job optional? And so we get to talk to Jessie today. She does a lot of finding and fixing, and she does it all.
Yep.
And funding, you know, she has all of these, you know, she knows how to get them funded and then fixes them. And then she decides whether she needs to flip it or whether she wants to fill it. And Jessie, what is your freedom number? How many did you have when you finally said, I get to do this full time? The other jobs are all optional at this point. Was there a magic number there for you?
So that's a tricky question. I went full time around like 5 units,
Okay.
but I knew that I started wholesaling. So I knew I still needed active income just inside of real estate, but it was full-time real estate. My freedom number, I have not hit it yet.
Okay.
Yep.
Now I pretty much have. I was in the salon industry, and when I got into the salon industry at age 40, I realized for me it was kind of a win-win. I realized that the salon business was pretty much, and for those of you that are listening, don't everybody run out and open a salon because it's a whole different animal. But I got into the salon industry and I realized it was somewhat of a cash cow and pretty recession-proof. You know, ladies still get their hair and nails done and all of that, even if, you know, they had to cut back somewhere else. And so once I made those realizations and got into the industry, the next step that I took that a lot of salon owners don't, and I'm here to tell you, if you are in the salon business, yes, do this. Don't run out and get into the salon business until you really explore it. But if you're already in it, do this. Buy your own building. Don't pay rent for 20, 30 years and have a shoebox full of rent receipts when you retire. And so when I made that realization and I bought my first building, then a couple of years in, I leveraged the first one, and Jesse will get this, and I'm sure Raj will too. And those of you that are listening, a couple of years in, I leveraged it and bought my second one. And then a couple of years after that, my third, my fourth, my fifth. And I ended up retiring in 20, 25 years with five paid for commercial buildings. And so that was my magic freedom number. Was that I needed to have paid for rental income coming in, and then I could use that as my retirement income. So I was able to retire. But since then, I like Jesse, you know, I keep seeing opportunities. And so once you're in the business and you're looking at it from the inside out instead of from the outside in, once you're in the business and you can see it for what it is from the inside out, you know when a deal falls into your lap. And you just know. It just comes with all of those other skill sets that you're developing. And so everybody goes, oh, are you still buying? And I want to say, well, not really. I'm trying to be retired. But you know what? If somebody's going to give something away, I have to do my part. And say yes. Yet again, I just bought my 29th door 3 weeks ago,
Congrats.
and already have it rented. The gal is actually moved in yesterday. So there you go. So I never say never. But we want to talk to Jesse today. For those of you that are interested in my academy, you can go to kathybenner.com and just click through and see all of the information there. But today we want to highlight Jesse, and we want to share how you can get involved in her tribe. Her tribe is totally separate from my tribe, but not really. A lot of the same folks are in both.
Lot of the
And
same.
we get that, and we understand that, and the rising tide raises all the ships. And so I'm here to promote Jessie today. She is a seasoned real estate investor, and she is an ed educator based in Columbus, Ohio. And over the past decade, she's built a substantial portfolio. Oh, how many now? I have in my bio for you over 70 long-term rental properties. Are you more than 70?
That's about accurate. We're buying and selling right now.
Okay, so we're going to talk about the selling piece today. So she's primarily using the BRRRR method, the buy, rehab, rent, refinance, and repeat. Her journey began with house hacking after college, and she has since scaled her investments by partnering with private lenders, assembling a remote management team. Jessie is the founder of Unlocked Rentals and the Rentals Made Easy Mastermind, where she mentors aspiring investors on building and managing rental portfolios efficiently. And most recently, has just authored her first book. So,
Yeah.
yay, Jessie, where's your
Thank
book?
you for the
There
inspo.
it is.
Rental unlock the proven step-by-step system to build wealth through rental properties.
I
So,
love it. I love it. I'm here promoting my third book. Jessie has her first book, so good for you. Good for you.
yeah, it's been fun to say I'm an author. Add that to everything.
I love it.
It's on Amazon, Kindle, or paperback.
Okay. Very good. So definitely put that on your list. Jessie, I will get you to type into the chat. Make sure it says for everyone. I am going to put my website there, and Jessie, put your contact or website information there as well. So as folks are listening in and watching, they can grab that information. And I will also put that, now you did it to the host and panelists. Make sure you click the
Did.
everyone button. You may not have that. Let me make
I do.
sure.
I do.
Yeah, I'm going to
Thank you.
make you a co-host as well. But anyway, yeah, make sure it goes out to everyone. And then when I upload this into all of our different platforms, because we come out on about 12 different platforms once this podcast is over today. We're on Vimeo, we're on YouTube, we're on Audioboom, and then Audioboom shares it with like nine other podcasting platforms. I will put your links actually in the description so folks
Awesome.
can find you.
Yeah, appreciate
Yep, I love it. So we're going to talk today. I know we've talked so many times about, when to buy and hold, but sometimes we don't talk about when is it time to sell. We call
that.
that sometimes the long flip. Sometimes I'll buy a property and I'll have it for 2 or 3 or even more years than that. And then I'll take a look at my spreadsheet. I used to hate this in corporate America when we had to do reports and spreadsheets. I used to hate that because I was like, oh, such a useless thing to do. It's so time consuming and what's it for anyway? But once you realize that sometimes you're down in the weeds too much and you really are not taking that 50,000 foot view, sometimes when you put things into a report or you make a spreadsheet of everything, all of a sudden the bad apples will jump out at you. And that is the point. You see what's going really, really well, and you see what is not going so. Now, it doesn't have to be bad. It just may be the worst performing property in your portfolio. Doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. I'm of the opinion that all real estate is good. There are just some are better, and then some are the best. And so you have to constantly ask yourself, where are my dollars doing the most good? If I want to grow my portfolio, is there some properties that I do need to flip out of here and move on so that I can buy a better property? And so oftentimes that's the question you have to ask yourself is what is good, what is better, and what is best? And so with that in mind, Jesse, what indicators suggest that it's time to sell a rental property instead of holding it? What do you notice in your portfolio?
I will tell you, I have a slideshow if,
Okay.
or you can guide the conversation, whichever you prefer.
Nope. If you have something you want to share with us, that is perfect. I made you a co-host so you can share your screen.
Cool. I will first answer that question because my slideshow is more geared on it's when to burr, when to flip, and it's more geared to like knowing that at the time of purchase.
Oh, perfect.
Versus a long flip. It's like already in your portfolio, it's already rented. My indicator, and this is not scientific at all, is it causing me headaches? If the property is causing me headaches, then we sell it. Like, because typically the headaches tie to financial indicators, right?
Okay. But if you've got a brand new investor, am I correct that sometimes the investor just needs to have a little more tools in their tool belt? Because if you're not geared to being a landlord and doing the buy and hold And if you have not educated yourself or connected with someone like Jesse or like me that can help you with some of that, everything is a headache. You know, I mean, the first time rent is late, you're like, oh, what do I do now? And so I think we have to have a skill set in place so that we can discern what really truly is a property that we need to get rid of and what truly is a property that maybe we need to beef up our skill set a little bit.
That's it. Yeah.
It's a perfectly good property that's performing well. We just need to be better at our end of what we're doing. So with that, go ahead, Jesse.
To answer, is there a question or the slideshow you're saying?
Yeah, go ahead with your slideshow. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
So this was designed for a presentation I did a while back. So we won't go over every single slide. You know, it's basically when to burr, when to flip. Can you guys see this?
Yes, we can.
So a little bit about myself, I will not give you the full story, but you know, 2010, graduated college. I was living in Austin, Texas. I got my big girl job. You know, they tell you get married, buy a house, have kids. I definitely didn't do all of that, but I did buy a little house. I bought a crappy little condo in Austin that it was $92,000, which I mean, at the time was appropriate, but now you're like, wow, that's amazing. And then I was renting those rooms. I was renting out the buy the room Craigslist, because this was even before Facebook Marketplace. Then a couple years passed by doing this, and I, one of the roommates at the time was my partner. We ended up splitting. And so I knew that it would be crazy to sell it. I knew that it would be really hard to live there emotionally. And I knew that it wouldn't make sense to pay two mortgages, right? So in the span of 2 weeks, I went from living my everyday normal life to being fully moved out and having four college boys renting my little condo. Yeah, and it was a whirlwind. I was totally figuring it all out as I went. I had no plan, no system, no role model, mentor, anything like that. So totally figuring it out. Couple months go by.
Good for you though. Isn't that how most of us get started? So for those of you that are out there doing that, it's okay. We've been there.
We've all been there. Yeah, we've all been there. And I joked that those boys could have stopped my career before it ever got started, but they ended up being like, they were fine. They were good residents. So it could have scared me away, but it didn't. And so a couple years passed by. I actually do that two more times. I buy a house that I live in. I'm renting out the rooms. I have one long-term rental. Then I do it again, and I have two long-term rentals plus my income, like from my own roommates. And so it was fantastic. But I still didn't know that this was real estate investing. I didn't know that this was a career option, anything like that. But I did know that
you're just trying to survive. You're just trying to pay the bills. Yeah.
I was just getting savvy. I still have my W-2 job. You know, over those 5 years, I kind of worked my way up a little bit. So I was making some good money, and plus I had my rental income, plus all my bills were paid. Like, I mean, it was going great. And so 2016 comes around, and I actually leave my job. I leave my three properties at that time. I leave everything behind. I go travel the world for a year. I met my gorgeous wife. I met the company that brought me here to Columbus. And that year passed by, and we moved to Columbus in 2017. And I couldn't tell you that I've ever felt so much like I was in the right place at the right time. Like Columbus, Ohio in those years, I mean, where it was a good time to buy. And so I moved here for a job. I still didn't know that you could be a real estate investor full time. And so I got a job. This whole time I was going to meetups. I was going to my RIAs. I was educating myself. I was doing all this. And so 2018 comes around, and I quit that job that moved me to Columbus, went real estate full time. I was wholesaling everything for the first couple of years. And it wasn't really until January 2021 that I got super serious about the Burr method. And that is when the portfolio boomed. So I was still buying, I still had my three in Austin. I was still buying rentals like the wrong way with 20% down. I was doing all the wrong renovations. I was doing all this. And then I discovered the Burr method. And that year we went from 11 doors, bought 22 more. So we had 33 doors. And like, I mean, I've never looked back. So Burr method, raising private money, all that really unlocked everything that I do today. That's when I finally actually started seeing myself as a real estate investor. It took 11 years to get there, but I did get there. And so since then, we've just been scaling, scaling, scaling. Like Kathy said, I have a mastermind as well that I teach other people to do this exact model. I'm a normal person. Y'all, I'm a totally normal person. This little cat down here, he's like 3 years old now and he does not look like that anymore. But, we love our pets and I love puzzles and plants and travel and all the regular things. But I just happen to also own a large rental portfolio. So let's look. I think I have some notes on this, but we're going to do this is the informal version. Okay. So,
Okay.
what's a flip? Obviously, we're renovating the property. In this terminology, we're saying with the intention to sell. Although, when I say burr, we're also renovating the property. Like, it's buy, renovate, rent, refinance, repeat. So we're renovating regardless. It's just when you're deciding, are you going to burr it or flip it? How much do you do on the renovation? So even on the rental side, I'm always aiming for 10 years of low to no CapEx. So, no roof, no windows, no hot water
Yeah,
tank.
explain CapEx. We might have some real newbies listening in for the first time, and they're like, oh, okay, now she's talking real estate talk, and I'm out.
So no CapEx is capital expenditures, and they're basically like improvements to the property. So these, it can be your cosmetics, but I'm really thinking more like the function, the safety. I don't want to come in while someone's living there and put in all new windows. That doesn't make any sense. So we're going to do all that stuff up front. And my goal is low to no maintenance. So if I take care of the big ticket items at my renovation prior to the refinance, then I'm not going to be stuck with, a broken furnace 1 month and then a hot water tank the next month. And it just makes the management really easy. So yes, we are flipping even on a burr, but we may not, we're just focused on function and safety and, the cosmetics, but we may not be doing the full level if I was going to go, turn around and resell it right away.
Makes sense. Yes.
So we did kind of talk about this. I know someone else hopped on. Roger, are you familiar with the burr method?
Yes, I am.
Okay, awesome. So we won't go into like too much detail, but essentially we're buying a property under market value. It's a distressed seller. Maybe the property's distressed, the situation's distressed, bankruptcy, divorce, foreclosure. We're renovating it, like I said, aiming for 10 years low to no CapEx. We go get it rented, market rate, because this is a nice, new, clean, safe, affordable property. We take this package to a long-term lender. It's renovated, it's got a market rate resident, and we say, hey, how much is this worth? We get it appraised, they'll lend us 75, maybe 80% of that new appraised value. I pay off my initial purchase loan. I pay back my down payment. I pay back any holding costs that I may have out of pocket. And then we just do it over and over and over and over. So the idea is like you're kind of recycling your money.
Do you use the same private lender generally to make the first purchase? Because
So,
they get to know you, and again, once you pay them off, the money is available again.
Correct. Yeah. So raising private money, that ability and skill set has totally changed my business. And there's nothing wrong with hard money. I actually really like hard money too. Like we have a couple lenders that if
Okay,
my private.
explain to our listeners the difference between hard money and private money.
So both of these are going to typically be short-term, high-interest loans. They're designed to be in and out in under a year, maybe 2 years. We're typically turning the money in 6 months on a burr, 4 to 6 months. The idea is that it's not a long-term lender. They're typically lending on the property itself. They look at you as the borrower, but most of it's really based on the numbers of the deal. And like Kathy said, once we refinance and we pay them back, that money's free again. So, we have one we just paid off today, 170K went back to a private lender. He's already asking me, hey, I don't want this money back. Like, what's your next deal? What's your next deal? And so I really only have four or five private lenders that I work with. And it
means and you know, you get to know them, they get to know you, and the conversation becomes so much shorter.
Yep.
Because they, yeah, you have a history with them.
History, exactly right. We have, I would say my best lender, his name's Adam, and we have done 18, 20 projects together at this point. And he doesn't, at this point, ask me zero questions. He's like,
what's he's got all your stuff. Yeah. He knows.
Like, what's the address? Perfect. Great. Like, okay, got it.
He goes, what's the address and where do you want me to send the check?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And so it makes purchasing direct to seller possible, because if you go direct to seller and you're like, hey, I can, or from a wholesaler, or even if you're making offers on the MLS, but you want to be competitive. So, you know, a lot of people, they want to sell quick. Not everyone. That's not important to every seller, but most sellers, they want to get paid. And so when I'm saying, hey, I can close in 3 days, I can close in 7 days, they're like, yeah, I'll take 20K less, or, you know, whatever they thought they could get, they're willing to take your offer because it's a promise of money, like, much quicker. And so private money has, like, allowed me to make those offers, where when I was buying the wrong way, conventional, like, come on, no, a seller's like, oh, you need 4 to 6 weeks, like, get out of here, and you're gonna have all these appraisals and inspections, like, you know, you're just not competitive. So by buying with private and hard money, I'm like so much more competitive than I could be otherwise.
Now, am I correct, Jesse, and please tell me if I'm wrong about this, when you do make an offer and you're using private or hard money, you can actually consider that as a cash offer. Am I right?
So we're particular about this. I will only write it as cash if I also have the cash.
Okay.
And I don't always have the cash, just depending on cash flow. But, you know, if the property is 120K and I look at the bank and I have 120K, like, I'll write it as cash because, you know, worst comes to worst, I'm not going to let the seller down. Like, I can close it cash. But if you don't have the cash and you're writing cash, that's pretty irresponsible, because a lender could technically back out up to the moment they send a wire.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you still make those deals contingent on financing them?
It's, yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's especially if it's on market, that's a conversation for your real estate agent. Make sure you have an agent who's investor friendly. They understand hard and private money, because it's their job to explain to the listing agent along with your offer, like, hey, I know this is a finance contingency. My buyer has used this lender for her last 25 deals. We've never had a problem. It should still be closed in 7 days, even though it says finance contingency.
So, okay. I get that. And inside my tribe, we have kind of an in-house realtor, and I'm sure you do as well.
Yeah.
So for those of you that are listening, you've got to start putting together your team, so to speak. So the first one would be, if you are not a licensed realtor yourself, putting together a team that has a realtor that can get you in and out of these deals and that can stay on top. Because again, it's hard to wear all the hats, and that way somebody can really stay on top of everything you need to know on how to make offers and, you know, in case some laws change or whatever, however that goes. And then you're going to build a team with those handful of lenders like Jesse is using. And I, as well, I have my go-to lender. Again, I call him up and say, here's what I want. And he says, when do you want to pick up the check? But you have to build those relationships over time. And so they are watching you and making sure that you're handling their money correctly. And then they'll handle your money correctly. So over to you, Jesse.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the burr. And then, you know, I'm always going to try to find a way to keep a property. My first exit is always, how can I keep it? And it's because there's so, you know, we all think cash flow, it's not that sexy. It really is not, especially with rates where they are. We're making $200-$300 a month per door. And that's after, you know, your maintenance, vacancies, like, we account for those things, but it's still not that sexy. Although it does need to cash flow. Here in Central Ohio, we're seeing, even at, you know, post-COVID, the whole nation saw it, we're still seeing pretty significant value, you know, appreciation in values. And I know a lot of the country still is, but some places aren't. And, you know, in Austin, appreciation's, it's really kind of stopped for the moment, but we're still seeing it. Oh yeah, like values have been stagnant for 2 years, and rents actually have gone down. So it's not sunshine and rainbows everywhere, but we're still doing just fine here in Central Ohio. Values are going up. A lot of the reason I buy is appreciation. So that's something I think about when I'm deciding, do I flip it or do I rent it? Principal reduction. I think this is the best part about all of it is I went out and I got this 75% of ARV loan, and someone else is going to pay it off. They're going to pay off the interest. They're going to pay my taxes. They're going to pay my insurance. They're going to pay off everything. They are going to pay it off. It's pretty brilliant. And then tax advantages. There's, your basic stuff from your write-offs, insurance, interest expense. You can write all that off. Your maintenance, write all that off. But then you have 1031 exchanges and cost segregation studies and all sorts of more advanced strategies that can, especially if you're doing this in conjunction with like a high income W-2 or, your high earner in other ways, you're gonna really, really be able to offset a lot of that like high tax bracket work that you're doing. Okay, so let's look at an example. And I won't read all these to you, but essentially this would be like a Central Ohio type deal. This is a few years old, so the prices have gone up a little bit, but the concept still applies. So, you buy this property for 75K, you put 25K into it, 5K in holding costs between maintenance, utilities, I'm sorry, between utilities, your interest expense, your taxes, insurance, all that. So we're all in for 105. Now, say the same property at the refinance, it appraises for 140K. They're going to give you 75%. The lender will give you 75% of the appraised value. So your new loan amount is 105. So if you look at it, you're all in for 105 and you cash out 105. So you own 25% equity in this property with no money in the deal. It's pretty good.
And again, that's a great example. You can plug whatever numbers you want in there. And again, the money is made at the time of purchase. You have to kind of know what your ARV or your after repair value is going to be before you buy the property.
Yep. And so you nailed it. If you look at example two, everything else here is the same except these numbers. So it works in a ratio. And so again, you can plug in any numbers and people say, will it work in my market? The answer is yes, if the rent supports your mortgage payment. So as long as the rent supports the mortgage, then you're good. But so you could buy for 230, put 60 into it. Your holding costs will be more because this is, taxes are more, everything's a little bit more expensive. You're all in for 300. It appraises for 400. 75% is of that is 300K. So you're in it for 300. You're gonna borrow 300 against it. Same thing. 100K in equity with none of your own money in the deal.
So
So that
you just made $100,000 on this deal.
correct. And I want to be very clear. Your net worth grew by $100,000. That money is not in your pocket. That money is tied up in a house.
It's
My
only in your pocket if you liquidate the
correct.
asset.
Correct. So my net worth is, I mean, it's substantial. We put in a lot of work over the last years. If you looked at my bank account, the car I drive, the house I live in, you would never guess because we're putting all my money, not all of it, but a lot of it's tied up in the house. Then that's what I'm here for. I'm here for wealth building. But I don't know what's next. Okay, let's see. I haven't looked at this in a while. So let's look at flipping versus BRRRR on a couple different like comparison categories because BRRRR is not always the right answer. It's not. If you are looking for cash right now, we're doing two flips right now that I knew it was going to be a flip going into it because I can't BRRRR everything. I also have to have money to live on. So we also do flip. Okay,
Okay,
flip.
so the flip is when you want to put some cash in your pocket.
It's for when I want to put cash in my pocket. If we have a property with too much equity, I could either refi or I could sell if I want to tap into that equity. But I have a bunch of examples on like when you should do either one. So let's look at these together. So the skill set, if you are looking at just flipping, you need to know how to source a deal, how to fund it, how to renovate it, and then how to sell it. Okay. If you want to burr that same deal, you also need to know how to rent it, how to refinance it, and how to manage it long term. So holding on to something is going to require a little bit more skill set than if you're just selling it off right away. You need that ongoing management. You have two financings, you have the purchase financing and the refi. So that would be that skill set wise. And if y'all have any questions, just hop off and ask away. Okay, so number of payments, y'all, if you're gonna flip, you get paid one time. Now it's gonna be a bigger paycheck, but you get it once and it's highly taxed. We may talk about that. If you burr, you're gonna get paid every single month. And what I should do is drag a copy of this big money down to the bottom, because one day you are going to sell it. So not only are you going to get these hundreds of paydays, you're also going to get the big payday at the end. And it's even a bigger payday because someone else paid down your mortgage for the last 10, 15, 20 years.
And the property appreciated that last 10, 15, 20 years.
Yep. So maybe I could put some numbers on this, but say you're going to make 30K on a flip and that property's worth 150 today. In 20 years, that could easily be worth double. And you owe 20, 30K on it. So your 30K payday just went to, 230K payday. And that's because you held. So I'm looking at the long term, as I've said 10 times already. But yeah, looking at the long term,
Well,
and you're
real estate's a long-term game, however you look at it.
yeah, exactly right. So burr is going to win when you look at number of payments. Equity growth, okay, you got none. Maybe you hit the jackpot and you bought in the right area and your flip took 8 months, 12 months if it was a bigger project. Maybe you saw some appreciation, but if you held that more than a year, something's gone wrong on your flip anyways. So the idea is to get in and get out, and that's a short time frame. That's not a lot of time for the market to do its thing. But if you're burring, you get like we just talked about, the increase in value over time and the principal pay down based on your amortization that someone else is paying. Tax advantages, if you're flipping, highly taxed, short-term capital gains, the rate has been changing based on who's in office, but you could be looking at easily 15, 20, 30%. What are we right now? 20%?
I think so, yeah. I
Right?
haven't checked recently,
Wasn't
but yeah,
bad.
it's in that range.
Yeah. So if you are burring, you can do a 1031 exchange, which basically you roll the proceeds from one sale into purchasing more property and you defer the taxes. So we just did a big 1031 where I took $160,000 from a sale in Austin. I moved that all to Ohio. I actually, as of today, own no property in Texas. The taxes, y'all,
Okay.
taxes are crazy. Crazy. We were paying like almost $8,000 on a $150,000 property.
Wow.
Yeah, it was out of control. And so there's no state tax. And so they get you on the property tax.
Okay. So this was a good move for you to 1031 exchange that over to Columbus.
Yep. So yeah, we moved that money here to Central Ohio tax-free. Now, I will pay the taxes on that once I sell the properties I move the money into. But there's a concept called swap till you drop, and you can basically just 1031 that same money over and over and over until you die, and then when you die it goes away. And
Because
then
it's a stepped up basis, yeah, for your heirs, yeah.
yep, exactly right. So you can pass it to your heirs tax-free. So that is one advanced strategy. Cost segregation basically lets you write off all of your improvements in 1 year instead of over 27 and a half years, which is the standard depreciation rate. So you can show a loss on paper even though you didn't lose any money. So that's going to help your taxes. Obviously your write-offs, you get those on burr, you don't get those on a flip.
Right.
Okay. So cash infusion, this is my number one reason when I'm deciding, do I flip or do I burr something? If a deal works as a burr, and we don't need the cash today, I'm always gonna opt for burr. But sometimes, I have employees, I have an op like I have overhead, I have software, I have all this stuff. So at some point, we do need to flip to keep the lights on. Any buy and hold investor, I mean, Kathy, you sell sometimes, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. And again, I call it the long flip because I usually have had it, I've held it, I've had it rented. But then when I take that 50,000 foot view and look at my spreadsheet or whatever, I go, oh, you know what? This property is good, but I could do better with something that I'm seeing coming on the market. And so at that point, I will go ahead and sell it so that I can, again, infuse the cash back in to my accounts so that I can get something even better.
Yep. Yeah, exactly right. So Burr, if you can find a deal that is priced so well, you can actually pull money out, which when I first started buying, we were pulling out $30,000, $40,000 on Burrs on a pretty regular basis. We're not seeing that as much today. And so it's possible if you find a really good deal, but just a little bit less likely. So flips, the kind of types of houses, some houses really only work as a flip. Like, if you're buying in an HOA where they don't allow rentals, that makes your decision for you, right? If you're buying, depending on your exit strategy, if you're doing shared housing, maybe a 4,000 square foot house would make sense as a rental. But for me, that doesn't make sense as a rental. Like, so if we came across a good deal that was in a location that was flip worthy, a size that was flip worthy, we can you can kind of work with a lot of properties as a flip, but they don't all work as rentals because now you have to keep in mind the market rent. And the key is, does that market rent support what your new mortgage will be? And a lot of times the answer is no. Like, it could be a $200,000, $300,000 property, and the rent's maybe only $1,400 a month. Like, you're going to be cash flow negative. So to me, that's a no. Some people buy that way. I'm a
No, I
no.
get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a no on that. So you can decide just kind of based on the property and the types of house if it would make sense or not. So this is just kind of a little recap. I think that they both have an important play, but I'm always going to try to keep something if I can. I don't know what else is on here. Okay, let's see. There we go. That's exactly what I said. Burr everything you can manage and flip the rest. So that's kind of the strategy.
No, I like it.
All right. That was my little slideshow.
I love that. Jesse, thank you. That was a wealth of information. Raj or Adrian, do you have any questions for Jesse on the call today?
So far, so good.
Cool.
Well, my question, Jesse, is how long in the Columbus market, how long did it take you to build those relationships with your lenders, because again, without the money, you're kind of just stuck where you are until you have the money, and you either have to have it in your bank account or you have to have somebody else's money in a private lender or a hard money lender, or even like you said when you got started, even a traditional where you're just
Yeah.
putting the 20% down and buying on a conventional loan. How long did it take you to build those relationships?
I will say not as long as you think. Like, you want to have a lot of lenders won't lend to a first-time investor. There's a lot that will, but some they want to see some, skin in the game kind of thing. They want to see that you know what you're doing because obviously they have a lot of money on the line. Private lender wise, I had already done quite a few deals. So when I started approaching private lenders, and I will tell you that the two best private lenders that I have both came from off-market sellers where I was buying their property. One was we bought 10 condos at the same time from the same seller. And it was like $450,000, something like that. And so I knew he was getting 450K. Another one was a 6-unit building that we bought where same thing. It was like four, I think 425. So I knew he was getting 425. So I just kind of casually asked, like, hey, what are you doing with your proceeds? And neither of them, and these are two totally independent people. They don't know each other or anything like that. And both of them really just didn't have a great answer. And so I was like, hey, well, just like I'm buying your property, I buy a lot of other properties like this. I'm always working with private lenders. How would you feel about, I think one of them, that's so bad. One, we started at like 4%. And I was,
Well, but that's when 4% wasn't bad.
still bad.
Oh,
Yeah.
was it?
I mean, it was better than like in a stock. I mean, not better than the stocks, but it was better in like a savings account.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm that same guy. I'm now paying 12%. So he's fine. But it started out there. Another one I have, we've done quite a few deals at 8%. And so it just depends on where their money is now, how much it's making. I would always start low, but at the same time, I do want it to be a win-win. I'm not going to offer something that's offensive where they won't want to keep talking to me. I want to kind of figure out how much is their money making now, and can I beat that?
And oftentimes that's all that's interesting to them is here,
100%.
I'm going to put it in a CD and what's the CD rate today? And if you can give them a couple of points higher than the CD rate, they're like, really? I
Yeah.
can, yeah, I'm in. Yeah.
And so all they want to know really is how much will I make and is my money safe? That's it. If you can answer those two things with confidence, you're going to be fine.
Now, how do you convince them that the money's going to be safe?
Well, I do. If you're a new investor, this one will be hard, but I do explain my track record. I share my portfolio details. I share my personal experience. I actually have like, I call it an investor pitch deck. It's part of our mastermind. We have all of our students fill out. And even if it's your first deal, I actually will put my phone number in the referral section because or references section. And a potential lender for one of our students, they can call me and because I'm looking at their deals, And so that just if it's your first one, having someone that can look it over is going to be a lot of give your lender a lot of confidence and someone your lender can talk to, right? It's not just like, oh yeah, so and so is looking at my deal. It's like, no, I'll talk to them about it. We'll walk through or whatever. So that's a big
Because
one.
the lender has to feel very, very secure that their money is going to be safe that they're putting out there. Yeah.
And it's not just like because I'm telling them it's secure, they're also secured by a mortgage. Like this isn't just a handshake deal. Like there's a mortgage on the property and it has their information. It will show up on any title search. If I go to sell or refi or anything, it will show up. They have a promissory note with when I'm going to pay, how much I'm going to pay, what happens if I don't pay, and then they have a first right of foreclosure. So if
Yeah.
I don't pay, they can actually take the property back.
All right. So for all of you that are listening, this is what Jessie actually has in her mastermind and with her students. This is what you get when
Yeah.
you work with Jessie. So for those of you that are wanting to do this and you're like, oh, I don't know where to start. I don't know how to get all of that paperwork. This is what she does. So I just want everyone listening to this to know that.
There's so many nuances, but at the same time, like it's not rocket science. You just here's the plan, you just do the plan.
Right.
And of course, it's not going to be perfect. If you think it's going to be perfect, just don't even start because it won't be. I mean, do start, but you know what I mean? You got to adjust your expectations. Like anything you do in your life, it's not gonna, you start going to the gym for the first time in years, it's not going to be pretty, right? It's not going to be perfect, but if you hire a trainer, it's going to be a lot better than if you were to go and try to figure it out yourself.
And again, the numbers are not all going to be exactly the same as her examples. You're going to have some better, some worse. But you know what? I'm a firm believer that real estate is good. Even the worst deals are good over time.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, because over time, you're paying the note down and the appreciation is going up. And so over time, an okay deal turns out to be a pretty good deal.
Yeah,
I
I've bought
remember.
some duds. I've definitely bought some duds.
Yeah, early on, I had some properties that really weren't even cash flowing, but they were good, clean properties that were easy to rent. You know, they had all the parts and pieces I needed except for the cash flow. And 5 years down the road, they were cash flowing fine. And now 10, 20 years down the road, they're amazing because rents continue to go up. The mortgage continues to get paid down. The appreciation continues to go up. And now they're some of my best performing properties, but they weren't at the very beginning. They weren't bad. They just weren't the best. But now they're some of the best.
So I say that businesses are built on like first base hits. If you think you're going to build a business on home runs, like get a home run, please. Go get one, two, three home runs a year. That's amazing. But that's not going to build you a business. You have to build a business on first, second base hits.
Yep, I agree. I agree with that. Absolutely. And what Jesse doesn't know is that I have a whole build a better business lane, and it's all we talk often about first base, second base, third base, and home runs. That's how we design our websites. And again, your business is built on those first and second bases. Absolutely. Yeah, the home runs, that's the, you know, the couple times a year I go out and have a glass of champagne. You know, but that's not the day to day, you know, in the trenches. The day to day is that first, second base.
We just bought a home run. I'm pretty excited
Okay.
about, yeah.
I just bought a home run too.
Did
Yeah.
you?
The
Good for you.
last one I just bought, 3 weeks start to finish, from offer to closing to having it rented.
Good for you.
Yeah, 3 weeks. So that one is definitely a home run. All right. Any other comments, questions, any aha moments for Jessie? Did anything jump out at you in her presentation that maybe you didn't know, or something that you saw again that reminded you, like, yeah, I really do need to pay more attention to that? Any comments there? We've got Raj and Adrian on. Adrian had answered in the chat. He had answered. He didn't
Oh,
have any
wow.
questions because he might be multitasking today. He could be at work. I'm not sure.
All
Raj,
good.
any aha moments from you?
No, just about the lending, doing with the hard money versus private money lending. I've never had to resort to that, but now I'm considering it. But I've done a whole bunch of flips since 2007, but that was all done with my own money, so I don't have proof to show that I borrowed money. So for me, I'm kind of hitting the roadblock that,
Oh.
that they're like, oh, even though you've done it, but you don't have it really disclosed on, paper or whatever. So, I've done it in LLCs, but again, the funding was all pooled in with our own partner's money. So I'm having a little, roadblock from that. And I haven't spoken to too many lenders, but I guess it's one of those lenders that doesn't want to actively lend. You know what I mean? So,
Jesse, what do you recommend? What could Raj do to get over that hurdle? If you had one of your students and that was their hurdle, what would be your recommendation?
yeah, I think it's actually surprising that they need to see a loan on it. Typically, lenders are just looking for exits. So you exited into, a long-term lend, like a sale or a refinance. And so
No,
some.
We just flipped properties, so we bought it with our own money and we rehabbed it with our own money, and we
And
sold
then
it for
sold it.
profit. Yeah,
Yeah, I
so I never
think
had to resort to borrowing money. But now I want to do bigger projects where, if I want to do ground, I'm doing ground up construction. So now just buying a knockdown in my neck of the woods is about $650,000 to $750,000. So I need the capital.
yeah, so the lenders that we typically recommend, they're looking for five exits that you, so five exits you owned for 30 days or more in the last 2 years. So
Yeah,
was that 2 years ago?
it was more than 2 years ago now because COVID slowed things down after we sold our last flip. I've just been focusing on my general contracting business, which is different. Now I want to acquire because I think the market's still getting hotter in my area, so I'm facing that little problem. Otherwise, I have to take a partner to JV with who has a lot of cash.
I would say that I don't know that you're a roadblock, and again, you've spoken to the lenders. I haven't, but I would imagine the roadblock would be more like the recency of when you were doing this, more than the fact that you were using your own money.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's not, I mean, we got to start somewhere though, so is it an end all, there's no
Well,
one there to help.
a joint venture might be the way to go on your first couple, and then get some recent stuff, on the
Going.
portfolio, and then approach the lenders again.
Yeah. Or just go with private money where it's different.
Private money. So Private money versus JV is basically the same idea. You would still bring in that high net worth individual,
Correct.
but you would just give them a percentage every month as like pure interest. They don't own any of the project.
Correct. Exactly. That's kind of where we're setting ourselves up for to go that route.
So I'm
That makes
putting,
sense.
Kathy, I do have to hop off because I have another.
Right, you got a 1 o'clock, I know.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I'm sorry. But Raj, I'm putting a link in the chat.
Okay.
Look at the first one on this list that says new and experienced borrowers get 350 for the first loan you close. Fill out that and we'll connect you with our recommended lender that I think would be able to help your situation.
Okay. All right. I got it.
Can you see the link there? Okay, John, Raj. Yeah. Okay, good. All
Yeah.
right.
Fill out the first one, and I think that's a good starting spot.
Okay. Great.
Cool.
Thanks.
Jesse, thank you so much. I really appreciate you being on. You see where you can connect with her. I'll put that in the description as well. Again, this is Jesse, and the name of your company again, Jesse?
Unlocked.
Unlocked. So
You're gonna make it easy. Yeah.
you can find her all over Facebook, Instagram, on the internet. I'll put all the links in the replay. So Jesse, thank you for being with us. I know you have to run because you got another, she's popular. She has another guest appearance at
I have
1 o'clock.
two more after this.
Oh, two more. Okay. All right, Jesse, thank you.
Thank you. Bye, Kathy.
Okay.
Bye, y'all.
We'll see everyone later.
Bye.
Bye.